Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
McDermott is the snapper. And the kick is no good! Wow! Go figure. Oh, baby, yeah. It's time to pray to the heavens, Michael. You're right. No good. Not even close.
Let's look at these laces one more time. Jeff Locke, the holder, is going to try and put it down. And bingo, looking right back at the kicker. And I'm telling you, psychologically, sometimes that can get a kicker.
Blair Walsh has 5 game-winning field goals to his credit, including 2 this year. He walked off a winner here against St. Louis and at Soldier Field. This will be a 27-yard try for all intents and purposes to knock Seattle out of the postseason. Kevin McDermott snaps. He's in his first year with the Minnesota Vikings. Jeff Locke holds. Blair Walsh from 27 yards left hash. Snap good. Spot down. Walsh's kick is up. And it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that. He missed it left. And the Seattle Seahawks are off to Charlotte. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal. And the Minnesota Vikings are going to lose 10-9.
Now, sometimes you just rather be lucky than good. And for the Seattle Seahawks, they were lucky today.
What it's going to take is either a block or a shank by their kicker. And he has shanked some before. But this is kind of right in his wheelhouse. This ball is right up. It is shorter than an extra point right now. It's just a matter of getting the football up in the air.
He's got 3 of them already today, does Blair Walsh, from 22, 43, and 47, but all were going in the other direction. This is a 27-yard field goal attempt from the left hash mark for Blair Walsh to try to give the Vikings the lead. The snap, the kick is up.
Missed it.
No good! Are you kidding me? It's no good! Oh, baby, it's Christmas in Minnesota, and the Seahawks have dodged a bullet from 26 yards out. Matt Blair misses. Blair Walsh, I beg your pardon, misses the field goal attempt, and Seattle now with 22 seconds left, and the Vikings have no timeouts left. One kneel down, and the Seahawks will move on to Carolina. Holy catfish, do you believe it?
Holy catfish indeed. What's going on? Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. Sean, we're back on the air live. It's been a while. How you doing?
Well, happy new year to all our listeners all abroad. And man, hope you guys had a tremendous Christmas and New Year's, and of course this is our first time back, Sean Wally, on a hiatus, if you will, and of course you're doing some things with the Harlem Globetrotters, and man, it's good to be back. And of course you played this insert here with what's been going on in the NFL, and of course the Seattle Seahawks, oh boy. Dodging a bullet would be an understatement, but they move on and get a chance to play the Carolina Panthers next week.
Your prediction was about 3 feet from being correct of a Seahawk loss, Mr. Boyd.
Yeah, you know, I did pick the Minnesota Vikings to win, and there was just reason. There was, you know, an inclination that what I felt the Minnesota Vikings weren't the team that the Seattle Seahawks played 5 weeks prior. I think that that was a little bit of fool's gold for Seattle to think that they would go in and walk all over Minnesota. And when you throw the elements as far as the weather is concerned, and, you know, a chance for revenge, it made it for a great recipe for Minnesota. And who would have thought that this would happen? And, you know, you're looking at a 27-yard field goal by Blair Walsh. He made three field goals prior. And, of course, this was closer than the extra point, the new extra point that has been put in by the NFL. It seemed like it was all, you know, academic, and the Minnesota Vikings would move on. But, oh, my goodness, that pixie dust that Seattle has looms its head again. And, man, Seattle, gosh, you cannot say that this wasn't luck. But, man, Seattle does it, and they get a chance to play next week.
Well, of course, the Twitter sphere all ablaze after that missed kick by Blair Walsh in Minnesota. And one of my favorites I saw was Roddy White, the great receiver of the Atlanta Falcons, put out there on Twitter, said, "Seattle finds another way to survive. They always do." So I thought that was pretty interesting coming from an opponent and a guy that's been around the NFL for more than a decade. And interesting, he thinks that Seattle always finds a way to get it done. So whether it be pixie dust, luck, the football gods, whatever you want to call it, that's why they play the game to all but zeros. And the interesting thing about Blair Walsh missing the close, supposedly easy kick, yes, the laces were the wrong way, but he hit one of the 40-yarders. The laces were also the wrong direction facing him, and it seemed like no problem.
Yeah, you know, all this talk about laces, it's really, it's a non-issue. And I know that people say, well, that's not true. You know, you face the laces out. But like you said, he had made one before, and it was right down Broadway. You know, what Roddy White was saying, I mean, you know, at some point you do have to start to wonder what in the world is going on up in the Pacific Northwest that allows them these weird, zany, crazy finishes and how they come out on top. It's not just something that is, you know, it's just weird. I mean, we can go all the way back to 2005 to where it was academic for the Dallas Cowboys to actually win. It was almost the same distance, about 20 yards, chip shot. Tony Romo mishandles the snap, and then now you have this, and then you can go back and you can talk about the onside kick against Green Bay. You know, the list goes on and on and on with Seattle. Earlier this year, you talk about the Fail Mary a couple of years ago. You talk about Detroit Lions marching their way into the end zone. Something weird happens there. Dude, it happens a lot with Seattle. And, you know, that's just, you know, when Roddy White says that, I mean, that it is what it is. I mean, Seattle has something going on. What, like you said, Sean, the football gods, I call it magic pixie dust, whatever it is, man. I mean, it works for them, and they get to see another week.
Well, a guy that might know a little something about either luck, magic pixie dust, football gods that revolve around the game of football is with us now on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Let's welcome in former Washington Husky and current head coach and player for the Tacoma Stars Reserves, Joe Jarzynka. Joe, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, Joe, man, what did you think about yesterday's football game? I mean, it looked like Minnesota had it won, and then, you know, we see this crazy phenomenon happen, which is, you know, I don't know. I call it, you know, pixie dust. But what do you think about yesterday's game?
Well, it was definitely a bit of a roller coaster. Once we had the lead with just a few minutes left in the game, I thought there's no way we're going to let this drop. We've got the momentum. We're just going to run 2.5 minutes off the clock, and away we go. And then when we couldn't run, we couldn't make a first down to save our lives, that was just horrifically irritating. And then to kick, give the ball back, and then to give up yards like that, I actually stormed out of the room and went to go bang my head on the wall somewhere. And it wasn't until I heard my wife going, oh, my gosh, that I actually knew that we had kicked a field goal. Or not kicked it. We had actually, they had missed a field goal, and we had won. So I wasn't even in the room. I was so mad.
It was a huge turn of events. And, of course, we have to give credit to the Legion of Boom because three field goals kicked. That means that the defense was doing their job. Of course, Minnesota up 9-0. And then all of a sudden they get the Seahawks get a score. And then all of a sudden it looked like, well, actually it was 9-0. And then Minnesota was driving down the field. And then Adrian Peterson fumbles. And that's what started the whole momentum shift with Cam Chancellor.
Oh, yeah. We just needed a little bit of a spark. I don't think you can discount the fact that it was -3 degrees or whatever. I mean, that is if anybody has even tried to walk outside when it's that cold, let alone play a football game, you just have no idea what kind of impact that has on the performance. And, yeah, they're professionals. We expect them to perform on, no matter what. But you really have to put that in perspective. And we seem to be really slow sometimes, and then we find that spark, and then we just kind of take off, and nobody can stop us. And it wasn't quite like that, but that was certainly a spark that allowed us to get some momentum going and put some points on the board.
Joe, what would you say the biggest impact of that cold weather was? And also, what's the coldest you can remember that you've ever played in, and how did that affect you?
You know, I think it's really the overall effect of the game. I mean, yes, you could say the quarterback throwing the ball, having exposed hands, receivers catching the ball, cold hands, all those sorts of things. But honestly, I didn't really see anything that would indicate that that was really the biggest problem. But I think it's here that the players are trying to overcome the fact that you're just literally freezing out there and having to focus on playing a football game. I think it lends itself more to the defense, certainly to the defense advantage than it would the offense. But it certainly has, it takes its toll. And as far as my experience, you know, I think our home stadium and then at the Husky Stadium was probably the site of the coldest game. And I don't remember any one in particular, but I can remember a handful that were just sleet, rain in your ear, just blowing, whipping through there, you know, 40 and raining sideways. You know, that I haven't, we've had practices up there where it snowed, but I never actually play a college football game in the snow, but certainly plenty that were blowing in your ear and raining in, you know, 40 or high 30s. And that is cold enough for me. Thank you.
What are your fondest memories of your time on the Husky football team?
You know, I've got a lot. The crowd and the fan base was so good to me and so accepting and supportive. I just felt like everybody in the whole stadium wanted me to succeed every time I stepped on the field. I mean, there's a lot of different plays that come to mind, but I think from a general sense, I tell this story every once in a while. I say, when you've got 80,000 people screaming your name and chanting your name, it tends to change a guy. And I can distinctly, I guess it's not 80, I guess it would be about 75, but I can remember many times where I carried the nickname Mojo for a while, and they get the crowd going back and forth from each side of the stadium, Mojo, and while I'm sitting back waiting to catch a punt, and that just kind of gave me tingles all over. It just fired me up, and I really appreciate everybody that showed that support for me.
Yeah,
if I had to boil it down to a play, though, certainly the 93-yard punt return against Cal at home, that's going to top my list. Where got I think it was the second longest in Husky history behind I can't believe I forgot his name. Anyway, that was that long punt return, shaking the fence at the end. Apparently I broke the finger of the guy that was on the fence right there. He sent me a message via Facebook with that clip, and it pauses, and he says, "That's me right there." Apparently he broke his finger. But that was certainly an amazing play, amazing experience to be a part of. And then to kick the extra point afterwards was historic.
Joe Jarzynka, former Husky, great joining us here on the Double. And we're reminiscing a little bit about some of the Husky folklore that you gave to us. And it was, you know, it was definitely a pleasure watching you play. You were, of course, being from Gig Harbor across the bridge. There was another player just that started before you that was at Peninsula, and I believe Paul Scanzi, and you brought some pretty good similarities. You know, you're playing halfback, you're playing the slot, and it was a breath of fresh air getting to watch you play.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there a lot of people made that comparison between Paul and I, and certainly the town of Gig Harbor is not very big, it's a great sports town, though, and people really appreciate those folks that do something and maximize their opportunities and their abilities and give something for the folks to be proud of. So any reference to somebody like, any comparison to somebody like Paul Scanzi is huge for me.
Well, I'll take it a step further. I mean, your NCAA career was so nice. You know, Steve Tasker is somebody that comes to mind because you could electrify Husky Stadium like nobody's business. I mean, whenever we needed the possession to change, you did an awesome job of making sure that the Huskies were in scoring position more often than not.
Well, I appreciate that. And that was really where a lot of it stemmed from. I was used early, sparingly on offense, and so special teams was an opportunity for me to get on the field and make something happen. And I talk about this with the young guys that I coach now on the soccer field. I say, you get an opportunity to step on that field, and you need to give everything that you've got to make a difference and make something happen while you have that chance. And that's kind of the way I lived every play that I was involved in at Huskies. My entire athletic career.
Joe, who have been the guys, when you look back on your sports career, whether it be football or soccer, that have guided you and mentored you and led you to the person that you are today?
You know, I'd say that Dave Janoski was another receiver, undersized guy. We are very, very similar on paper. He's a very smart guy, very athletic, but undersized. And, you know, he, from a mentoring standpoint, I think did a lot for me, talking me through all the time we spent watching film and all that stuff. A lot of the other folks that I would say have influenced my career was more along the lines of leading by example. And again, these are some of the concepts that I bring to the young guys that I work with now, is guys like Lawyer Malloy, first one there, working hard the entire time, first in line, nobody's going to beat him, last guy to leave, staying after practice and getting extra reps. Jerome Payton, Fred Coleman, those guys, Brock Heward, Dane Looker, you know, these are all guys that had success, but they weren't arrogant. They didn't take it for granted. They were always at the front of the line, leading by example, showing the young guys how we do things, and that's something that I continue to preach.
Now, football, of course, in your college days, getting more notoriety, but you've been a big soccer fan and soccer player throughout your life, and you currently are a player and coach for the Tacoma Stars Reserves in the Western Indoor Soccer League. Man, that's got to be a lot of fun playing at the Tacoma Soccer Center in downtown Tacoma.
Yeah, you know, it really is a lot of fun. As you mentioned, I've been playing soccer my whole life. When I was in high school, I didn't get a chance to play football until I was a freshman in high school. So I kind of got wrapped up in that sport and really took to it. And while I was recruited to a few small schools to play soccer, I had pretty much made up my mind that I was going to play football in college at that point. So chose a different route, but now given an opportunity as an adult to kind of reawaken my soccer career, it's a sport where you can play for your whole life, and you can take it to whatever level that you desire. You know, there's everything from very basic rec leagues to everything up to the professional level, both indoor and outdoor, obviously. Locally, we have the Tacoma Stars organization, which you mentioned I'm a part of. Our first team plays at the Kent Schiller Center, our home games there, and then travels around the country for all of our away games, plays in the major arena soccer league. Our reserve team, which everybody on the reserve team is trying to make the first team roster, and that's partly my job as the head coach of the development team or the reserve team, is to help the younger guys and help these guys that that want to get to the next level, to give them the tools to do so. And it just so happens that I get to continue a high level competitive athletic career as well, playing at the semi pro level at age 38. So it gives me everything that I need. I love to coach. I love to play. I love to compete. And if I can, and I feel like I've got an obligation because of these tools that I've been given to not only perform but also to teach. I feel an obligation to pass this on to anybody that wants to hear it.
Joe Jarzynka joining us here on the double, talking about your soccer background. And of course, not too many people knew, but you had mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, not too many people knew that you were also going in as a place kicker at the University of Washington. I believe your longest kick was 44 yards. Man, that says a lot, you know, to be a punt returner, a receiver, a halfback slot, and then going out and kicking field goals, man, that's tremendous.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, when I was in high school, the only time I came off the field was during punt team. I was a good kicker, could not punt the ball to save my life, and so I took that opportunity to take a breather. But when I got to college, obviously they try to pare you down and kind of put you in one little spot, and I had a heck of a time trying to, choose whether I wanted to play offense or defense, and ultimately decided that, yeah, I want to play on offense, and made that decision there. And then certainly the special team stuff, the return action, that was something that came very natural to me, and was something I really enjoyed. I felt like I had a vision. The way that I saw the field really lent itself to that sort of style. I really appreciate Tyler Lockett. He's one guy that I think is very, very similar in style to the way that I return punts and kicks. And I love to watch him play. It kind of brings a warm feeling to my heart, I have to say.
And so, of course, you know, with soccer, now you're playing soccer. You mentioned that you're 38 years old. I believe there's another teammate of yours that's 38, but he's playing goalie. He's the goalkeeper. You're a midfielder, man. How are the legs holding up?
Yeah, I have to say that there are times when I feel every bit of 38 years old. And I, you know, the young guys laugh at me, you know, to throw around the Gramps comments and, you know, things of that nature. You know, Aaron Anderson is our goalkeeper, and he is phenomenal. And certainly he doesn't have to do all the running and things of that nature every day in, day out like I do, but he takes his beatings in a different way. He's getting shelled in the goal. And if you've ever watched a high-level indoor game, it is nonstop action. It is fast and furious, and these guys are rocketing balls at you from point blank range, and you just kind of lay your body to the wind and hope you get in the way. And he has been a phenomenal goalkeeper in this region for a long, long time. But I have to say that there are many days where I'm not sure how exactly I'm going to be able to warm up for that given practice, but somehow I always do it.
Now, Joe, you had mentioned the comparison and the fast-paced play of the indoor soccer league. My experience from indoor soccer, man, I'm kind of telling on my age, but, man, I can go all the way back to, like, 1986, 87, which I believe that this league is kind of a spinoff of the MISL. And I remember the Dallas Sidekicks and the Tacoma Stars and Steve Jungul, who was actually, you know, Mr. Tacoma Stars then. And, man, there was 26,000 people in the Tacoma Dome. What's the atmosphere like as far as the indoor soccer league that you're playing in now?
You know, this league, the MASL, is a combination of what was two separate leagues at one point, but is the preeminent professional indoor league today. And the numbers aren't quite the same. You know, certainly the Tacoma Stars set a record against the Dallas Sidekicks in that game that you're referring to. That was phenomenal. In fact, our first team is traveling to Dallas on Wednesday to play the Sidekicks at least once. I know they're playing, I think they may play Thursday and a Friday or Thursday, Sunday, something like that. But they're traveling down there this weekend. So, you know, people still talk about that stuff. And, you know, we travel, well, with the rekindling of the Stars program here in the Northwest, we've had a lot of excitement, and certainly we're not back to the days of putting 20,000 people in Tacoma Dome, but at the Showwear Center, they see, I think, 6,000 there, and I think the opening night we put 3,000 or 3,500 people in there, and that was phenomenal. We've been getting over 1,000 people for every game, which is really exciting for everybody. We're rebuilding the franchise, and it's catching on. I think most people that come out to a game, if they haven't been to a Stars game before or for a long time or a high-level indoor game, everybody is excited and pleasantly surprised. I mean, it is just a rocket-paced game, and I don't care if you're even a sports fan or not. You can't help but have fun and watching the game. And the guys are so talented and so crisp and fast. It's phenomenal to watch these guys. Even at practice, sometimes I just kind of chuckle watching these guys that I'm training with, playing with. I said, I can't believe I'm sitting here, you know, I'm here training with these guys. They're amazing. But even the region has really supported our program. Even our reserve team, we get upwards of, you know, 250, 300 people plus out to our games. And last at the Tacoma Soccer Center, and last year, before we really jumped into the first division, we had up 650 people in the Tacoma Soccer Center. I mean, the place was jam-packed and rocking, and we really appreciate the grassroots support from everybody around here.
Joe, what do you think it'll take to get the Tacoma Stars, and heck, even your team, the Tacoma Stars Reserves, to get the support at a level close to what it was back in the 80s for the Tacoma Stars that played back then in the Tacoma Dome? Soccer is doing well in the Pacific Northwest with the professional outdoor leagues, the Timbers and the Sounders. So there is a fan base for sure.
There certainly is. And it's an educated fan base, and people know what they're watching. They appreciate it. You know, just with starting any franchise or even restarting, you've got to get some momentum. And, you know, you've got a limited budget for player salaries to start off, but you do the best you can. Our owner, Lane Smith, has really given us the tools to put some folks in place. And Darren Sawatsky, who is a kind of a Northwest local legend in the soccer world, he's done an amazing job at choosing players that will fit into our system, that will create the right kind of chemistry in the locker room and that sort of thing. And I can honestly say that there is not one bad guy on this team. You know, everybody that is here is there for a reason. And if we don't like it, you're not sticking around. And that's kind of the culture that we started with a long time. John Crouch is a good friend of mine. He's a local snow and skateboard rep, clothing rep, and soccer fan. He started the club as South Sound FC 5 years ago, and that club ultimately turned into the rebirth of the Tacoma Stars. And so we created a culture of working hard, a blue-collar work ethic, working hard for your brothers and fighting to the end, and that's the kind of thing that we're trying to perpetuate today at the professional level.
And Joe, your next game is Saturday at the Tacoma Soccer Center, 7:30 p.m. against the Vancouver Victory. Get on out to TacomaStars.com and get some tickets and go see what Joe Jarzynka and crew have in store for you. Should be fun on Saturday.
That's right. I appreciate the plug. Yes, that will be rocking there. It's a cheap and or I should say it's a inexpensive way to bring the family out and enjoy some really exciting local soccer, and who knows, one of these guys could be the next big star of not only the Tacoma Stars professional team, but perhaps the Sounders as well. So come on out and take a look. I appreciate that.
Joe Jarzynka, thank you so much for your time, your insight. Best of luck Saturday and the rest of the schedule for the Tacoma Stars reserves.
Thanks very much, guys, and go Dogs.
All right.
There goes Joe Jarzynka going down in our record books as the first guest of 2016 here on the Double.
Yeah, and man, we didn't even get a chance to talk with Joe, and we're going to have him back on, Sean Wally, because you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about his business prowess and what he's doing as far as real estate and investments are concerned. And, you know, I'm sure he's doing some awesome things, and, you know, you or I could probably use a couple of tips as far as investments are concerned. So we're definitely going to have Mr. Jarzynka back on talking about that.
Absolutely. You know, he's done a lot in his life on and off the sports field or diamond or whatever the pitch, I guess they call it in soccer. So he's done a lot of great things, and he studied hard in school, and he's got a lot of adventures going on. So great to see a local guy doing good things in the Puget Sound region.
Yeah, I'm happy that he's, you know, resurging this reserve team, the Tacoma Stars reserve team. Of course, the A team that they have, they're doing pretty well as well. I believe they're 7-5 on the year. Their next game, January the 14th, that's coming up. Dallas Sidekicks, that's in Allen, Texas. And so, yeah, we wish Mr. Jarzynka some luck there.
And also, real quick, they come down your way a lot, Sacramento.
Yeah, to play the Surge. And so that's some fun action, man. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to have guest number two, Greg Bell from the Tacoma News Tribune. $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a comer. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit poweralleyperformance.com.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com. Guys, are you tired of being tired? Frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds. And more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest. I tried a different product and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra strength, all-natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to Andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd, and we are joined now by big-time guest number two. That is none other than Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, the Seahawks insider. Greg, have you thawed out from that trip to Minnesota?
That's going to take a couple days, guys. Back in Seattle, where it's 40 degrees here, and that's 50 degrees warmer than it was this morning when I woke up in Minneapolis. The Seahawks took a while to get over that, too. They were pretty taken aback by how cold it was, and it really shut down their offense and really limited what Russell Wilson in the passing game had been doing for the last 6 weeks. Doug Baldwin told me in the locker room, I underestimated how the cold would affect him, and he scored the only touchdown in the game. So the Seahawks are really looking forward to getting back to normal weather, and they think they're going to be functioning normally on offense and would be a much more representative showing on Sunday in Carolina, where it's supposed to be 53 degrees. That'll be a 60-degree swing if it gets up that high.
Now, outside of you barbecuing up in the Pacific Northwest today and thawing out, walk us through, because, you know, we had a chance to listen to Warren Moon and Steve Rabel and the sound of their voice as Blair Walsh was kicking the field goal. What was going on in your mind when that, with the field goal being set up and what looked to be a winning field goal kick for the Vikings?
Well, what first went through my mind is Seahawks, because they had to take a timeout early in the second half because the play clock was running down for the third time in the game. They had blown themselves at least 35, 40 seconds, and that there should have been a minute left for that offense after the kick was going to be good to go down and try to answer. But because they didn't have a third timeout, Minnesota could run that clock down to 26 seconds, 28 seconds before they snapped it for the field goal. So I was thinking at the time that the offense blew to get twice as much time to have a chance, and that was probably going to be their final chance to be blown because of that. Then we were at the opposite end zone, as most NFL stadiums' press boxes are now. They're usually near the goal line, or even worse, in places like New England and Miami, they're wrapped around the goal line, and you're actually looking at them from the corner. So I was in the opposite end, so I couldn't – the angle we have, you can't really see whether it was good or not on any kicks. My binoculars were trained on Walsh, and when he kicked it, I kept my glasses on him, and he had absolutely no reaction whatsoever, which I thought was odd because I knew that at a 27-yard kick, short of an extra point, it wouldn't take long for the ball to get to the goalpost. So then I immediately put my glasses on the two officials underneath the crossbar. And it was kind of funny to see it through the binoculars. They kind of looked at each other and, as if to say, do you believe that that just really happened before they actually gave the signal for no good? It was almost like they were trying to confirm with each other that, I mean, they always confirm with each other to see whether it went inside or outside the upright, but they almost looked like they were confirming with each other, like, can you believe that? And then they gave the no good signal. I've only outwardly yelled at a play out of sheer reaction twice in my career in a press box. Once was the interception at the one-yard line at the Super Bowl in February, when I could not believe when Russell Wilson went back to pass. I yelped when he went even back to pass before the interception. And then the second time was yesterday when Walsh missed that kick.
So what is the sentiment in the locker room? I know listening to the fans and when you're looking on Twitter, you know, everybody knows that Seattle dodged a bullet. But how are these guys feeling in the locker room?
Lucky. And they were also cold. And it was a muted celebration because they were exhausted. The physical and mental drain of playing 4 hours, 3.5 hours in that kind of cold really drained them. And they were exhausted. And it really was a survive and advance type of feel. I know that they are the cliche to say that in the postseason, but that was the epitome of surviving a playoff game. They didn't excel. They didn't do things that they're going to look back on and go, wow, that was great, except for the defense. Of course, they had another great game, and it really held the Seattle offense into the game. But offensively especially, they're not going to look at this and say, look what we accomplished. They're going to look at that and say, we survived. And that's what Pete Carroll said after the game. And in the locker room, they celebrated the accomplishment of having persevered and staying disciplined and keeping up faith and believing in the conditions that were all set against them. Of course, they were set against Minnesota, too. Everyone says, well, that's Minnesota. There's only one guy on that roster who's from Minnesota, and they're a dome team that's playing in a borrowed stadium for two seasons while their new dome gets built. So they weren't ready. They weren't any more ready for that than the Seahawks were.
Now, Greg, what does it say of Seattle's defense to keep Adrian Peterson in check for not one, but two games? He's the league's leading rusher, and they've done this now twice in 5-6 weeks.
It says that they are allowing only 36 yards per game in their last 7 road games and on the ground, and they are playing disciplined run-gap defense. In the NFL, most elite backs get their yards on cutbacks and on penalizing defenses that aren't disciplined, that want to chase out of their gaps, go away from their assignment to go find the ball carrier. And the Seahawks in 2 games against Peterson did not do that. They have assigned gaps. They make their front four has 4 gaps. Their 3 linebackers have 3 gaps. And so those guys, 7 guys and 7 gaps, and they stay there, and they don't chase, and they're patient, and they have to wait on Peterson to come to them. Because if you chase a guy like Adrian Peterson, you've left your gap, and he's going to cut back to the gap you just came from and get 120 yards a game. That is really the essence of why they've been so good on run defenses. They are winning their battles and staying in their gaps and not getting moved out of them. Brandon Mebane and Atiba Rubin have been phenomenal, underappreciated at defensive tackle, taking up 4 blockers yesterday. That left Minnesota with really only 1 blocker and a tight end to try to handle the Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett outside at defensive ends. And you guys saw, and you've seen all season if you watch the Seahawks, how quick and destructive those guys have been in the backfield. Bennett had another phenomenal game yesterday. He really wasn't able to be blocked for most of that game. And that's what they're going to have to do at Carolina, because Carolina, as much as Cam Newton can carry that team, they don't want to rely solely on throwing the ball 40 times a game. And not against the Seahawks, the way their pass rush is with Averill and Bennett right now. So it'll come down again to stopping the run, which is they've done very, very well in their 6-game winning streak on the road.
And I think it'll be great to see Russell Wilson against Cam Newton with decent temperatures, good weather, and just having those two teams, those great players, go mano a mano and duke it out and see what happens.
The Seahawks have confidence that they can beat Carolina because they played them. This is the 5th meeting in the last 3 years. They beat them, of course, in the playoffs in Seattle last January, this time last year. They led by 9 points with 6 minutes left in October in Seattle, and they blew that game by giving a touchdown late. Greg Olsen ran down the middle of the defense because Richard Sherman was in one zone coverage and the rest of 3 defensive backs were in another. A communication breakdown that the Panthers exploited for the winning touchdown with 26 seconds left. the Panthers are going to go back to Greg Olsen because tight ends have hurt Seattle since the opener at St. Louis, and it did again when the I thought it was interesting that the Vikings waited until the game was on the line in the final drive to go to Kyle Rudolph, and he beat Chancellor twice. Once they ran into each other for a, you could debate that personal or pass interference penalty, but then the second time they went right back to him, and Chancellor couldn't stop the pass, nor could he make the tackle, and Rudolph ran right through him and got him into field goal range. I thought they were going to throw to Rudolph a lot more earlier in the game, and they just waited to the very end, and it almost beat the Seahawks. I think Greg Olsen is, he always is the number one target for the Panthers. He's again going to be the focal point of both the Panthers offense and Seattle's defense and what they have to stop.
Greg Bell, the Tacoma News Tribune Seahawks insider, joining us here on the Double. Now, Greg, when we were off the air, one of the things that we had talked to you about was the travel, and you had mentioned, man, you're not looking forward to actually coming home that with that Midwest trip and then going back east. How much of a psychological issue would that be for the Seahawks doing the same thing? I mean, it's only nomenclature to feel like that. Is that going to be an issue for Seattle?
Well, I'm not getting paid $4 million a year to do what those guys are doing, nor am I getting a playoff bonus for winning in each round. It goes up each round they win, nor am I trying to win a third straight, go to a third straight Super Bowl, something no team has done since the salary cap came into play in 1994. So it's different for me. I got a wife and two kids. So selfishly, I don't want to be traveling all over the country every weekend. I've done this for a few, more than a day or two now. So to me, it's not. But for them, it won't bother them a bit. Pete Carroll's got a schedule down that he sends these guys out on Friday for a Sunday game on the East Coast. And that was a time here about 5 years ago when Carroll first got to Seattle that 10 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific start times, 1 p.m. on the East Coast was a problem for the Seahawks. They'd lost a bunch in a row in that situation. That's gone now. They won again here against Minnesota in that same situation. December 6th at Minnesota was the same thing, and they won 38-7 at 10 a.m. Pacific time. I really don't think at this time of the year that the travel thing is going to bother them. I mean, the cold's going to bother them, but it won't be that cold as it was. It's never going to be. Pete Carroll said it after the game in the locker room. You'll never play in a game that cold again. I mean, it was the third coldest game in NFL history, just behind the Ice Bowl and that San Diego-Cincinnati game in 1982. The Mississippi River was frozen over, guys. Come on. It won't be like that in Charlotte on Sunday. So they knew back in November 15th when they lost to Arizona at home that the NFC West was gone. And so to get in the playoffs, they were going to have to be a wild card and be on the road. They've been mentally even physically preparing for this with their travel plans since mid-November.
Now, speaking of wild card, Greg, there is a wild card player on the Seahawks, and that is none other than Marshawn Lynch. Of course, Marshawn Lynch deciding to pull himself out for this game against Minnesota. What type of an impact will Marshawn Lynch play, and have you heard anything about his latest injury issues?
I'm totally unprepared to answer that question because I had no idea you were going to bring that up. I'm totally at a loss to even try to answer that question. It's topic number one. It's on the front pages here. It's what I write about five times a day, every day. It's what everyone asks about. Pete Carroll, the latest is that the Seahawks are in the same position they were last Monday, which is they are hopeful, but they are waiting to see how Marshawn Lynch responds to practices. Now, last week he was a full participant, as you probably know, in all three of the practices. Pete Carroll said Lynch was, quote, ready to rock, said that ready for a full workload, 20-some carries, and looking forward to it. And then on Friday morning, he even told a radio station in Seattle that Lynch would, quote, will play at Minnesota. And then a few hours later, after practice, he said, well, we're going to have to see how to take it up to game time. He's questionable. And then a few minutes after that, Lynch told the team, well, I'm not going to be able to play. I don't think I can make it. And, by the way, I'm not even going on the jet to Minneapolis. And that's how they found out he wasn't playing. This is the bed that the Seahawks have made long time ago, many years ago with Lynch, giving him autonomy to train on his own with his own guys in the Bay Area, to do their own things and not practice during seasons and train in different ways and get ready for games in different ways. They just let him run his own show. And that worked great when he was the NFL's leading rusher and touchdown maker from 2011 until this, his first injury-filled season of his career. the bargain the Seahawks have made with him doesn't work quite as well for the Seahawks when he's not on the field. He's only played 7 games this season. He hasn't played since November 15th. And so then it becomes a more of a distraction and a detriment to the team if he's not on the field because of this. He wasn't even with the team, guys, but one day out of 43 until last Monday, a week ago today. So he hasn't even been a part of the franchise. He's been away, off-site and at large, for the terms that Pete Carroll kept using for him. They need him. They need him Sunday at Charlotte. If they win that and go to Arizona or Green Bay, they will need him again. If they got back to the Super Bowl, they would need him again, and they know that, which is why they are letting him do what he does, marches to the beat of his own drum and all that, is because every time they've done that in the last 5 years, it's paid off on the field. They just got to get him back on the field. Pete Carroll says day-to-day, I will tell you guys, my gut feeling is he's going to play. Of course, that was the feeling last week as well. I guess if he gets on the plane, that would be progress from last week.
Yeah.
Greg, looking into your crystal ball, is this Marshawn Lynch's final season in Seattle?
Yes, I think so. I don't have reason to believe that for definitively, but I believe that even before these injuries came up. When he signed the two-year extension to the 2017 season, it wasn't to play through 2017. Nobody around the team felt he would be around then. He'll turn 30 in this April. The reason he signed that extension was to get $5 million up front for this season, bringing his salary and bonuses to $12 million for this year, to earn as much as he can while he can. And then for this very reason, in case he has a season where he plays fewer than half the regular season games, and all of a sudden he's not marketable and not commanding the earning power anymore, his salary cap number, guys, is $11.5 million next year. There is no team in professional sports that would give a 30-year-old player who plays fewer than half the regular season games the year before $11.5 million toward its salary cap. So they're going to ask him to renegotiate. Marshawn Lynch is not going to pay. He's going to tell the Seahawks where to take their renegotiation if they ask him to. And I expect that's when he would walk away. Now, there's speculation, as always has been, thoughts that he would want to end his career with a season in Oakland. Again, that would take money that he's going to ask for money from whatever team that might want him, that I don't think anybody in the NFL is in a position to give him. It doesn't change his legacy here. There are a lot of people who think if the Seahawks let him go, that they're not being grateful. It's just the economics and realities of the NFL and aging running backs in particular. But it would take a complete change of thought in his mind to swallow his pride and his stance and everything he stood for to take a renegotiated salary cap number to play here next year, and I just don't see that happening.
Well, it's a good thing Thomas Rawls is on the roster. Too bad he broke
his
ankle. Greg Bell, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're taking time away from your family. We'll let you get to the volleyball action. And you follow Greg at GBellSeattle on Twitter. And, hey, Greg, I'm going to send an email to Darren Bean to get you some playoff extra cash, because that definitely should be happening.
I appreciate that. I'm sure they'll get right on that. The Trillion News Tribune will get right on that. I appreciate you thinking that way. Thanks, John.
Thanks for your time, Greg.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good to talk to you again.
All right. Take care, Greg.
Here goes Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, the Seahawks insider. He is a busy, busy man in playoff time in the NFL.
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, Greg is very excited to have one more week to be able to cover the Seahawks. And, you know, there is the Seahawks are not leaving us without suspense this year. And, of course, you know, some of the things that are going on off the field with Marshawn and, of course, the great play, the gutsy play that the Seahawks have had, and having 9 lives, and I believe they've used up 8. So they should have about maybe 1, who knows how many lives they have left, but Greg's going to be busy covering those Seattle Seahawks.
All right, Sean. So you thought the Minnesota Vikings would defeat the Seahawks, and as we mentioned early on, they almost did within a few feet of defeating the Seahawks, but whether it's pixie dust, the football gods, the frozen air, whatever you want to call it, it did not happen. Carolina, Seattle. I'm assuming you would pick Cam Newton and the Panthers, but enlighten our listeners. Who do you take in this Sunday NFC Divisional playoff game?
You know, it's interesting just because of the fact that Seattle always finds a way to come through. And, you know, we can call it luck. You know, we can call it, you know, divine intervention, you know, which a lot of Seahawks fans love to throw that around, like God loves Seattle and nobody else. But, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, the Seattle Seahawks find a way to win and they always find a way to come through. You know, I had this talk with my brother yesterday because he was so jovial and he reminded me of my father giving me a call after each week that, you know, Seattle pulled one out and we couldn't figure out how in the world they did it. But, you know, my brother, he called yesterday and he was so excited. And I thought, man, you know what? At some point, you know, it's going to run out. I just don't know when that is. Seattle always finds a different way to win at the last second. And, you know, Pete Carroll and his team wind up jumping up and down with the, oh, my goodness. And, you know, I have no clue type of a feeling.
Hey, time out. Let me interject for 2 seconds.
Uh-huh.
The last Super Bowl was not that way.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it happens every so often. But,
let's think about the last three playoff games for the Seattle Seahawks. You have yesterday's game in Minnesota, the ridiculously cold temperatures, and that crazy ending with the missed kick. You go to the Super Bowl in Arizona. You have the Seahawks 3 feet away from a victory, and the Patriots steal it away. You go back to the NFC Championship. Packers have that sewn up. Not only do the Seahawks get that ridiculously crazy, you might as well call it a Hail Mary two-point conversion, then you've got the onside kick. What are the odds of getting one but both? And then you go to overtime and have that ridiculously crazy ending. So the last three playoff games for the Seahawks have come down to the final play.
Yeah, you know, and I believe that it's going to be a close contest this weekend with, you know, against Carolina. You know, I believe what everybody's looking forward to is the chance to see what Russell Wilson is going to do against the Carolina defense. Now, Russell Wilson's not going against Cam Newton. He's going against the Carolina defense, which is a defense that I believe is very similar to the Legion of Boom. They just don't get the credit. They have very strong inside linebacker core. And let's not forget that they have a strong secondary as well. And they match with athleticism. I think that's overlooked when you listen to a lot of analysts, when you listen to, you know, a lot of the big networks, they automatically put Seattle in week after week. Well, let's just face it, because it's Seattle. And so I kind of find it, you know, a little more interesting with these other teams, because when you're looking at a Carolina team, as Greg Bell was mentioning, Carolina has played Seattle pretty close, with the exception of one game, I believe, which was the playoff game last year. But Carolina and Seattle are very similar in stature. I just believe that, you know, this year is Carolina's year. I believe that they know that Seattle is coming. They've heard, you know, the murmurs from Michael Bennett saying that, hey, the pressure is on them now. They do not want a Seattle Seahawks team coming in and walking all over them and spoiling a season that is has been a magical season for them at 15-1. I just don't think that – I just believe that Carolina knows what's at stake and they're ready to bring it. I don't think that they're going to blow out Seattle. I think, again, that it's going to be a close game. But Carolina puts their mark on – this wasn't a fluke this year that, you know, we won that football game, and we're going to show you. And so, you know, I know that Russell Wilson has had this magical second half of the season, which should catapult him to MVP stature, which is not true, by the way. But he is playing great football. But I just don't think that Seattle has enough to do what it takes to go into Carolina. And unlike Greg, I do believe that the road takes its toll, And so even though they, you know, they, it was an emotional game yesterday, I do believe that traveling 3,300 miles over the next 6 days does mean something. And it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy for Seattle, but at the same time, I believe that Carolina is going to be waiting with an extra week and take care of business.
Which means you're predicting a Carolina victory.
Definitely. I'm predicting a Carolina victory. I'm predicting that Carolina, you know, moves on into the playoffs. I believe that that they will play Green Bay, actually, in the NFC Championship game. And Carolina goes on to the Super Bowl.
Okay. Of course, not only the homer in me, but the football aficionado, which, you know what? See, we're going to pretend nobody's listening, even though we've got thousands of loyal listeners.
Yes.
So just you and I talking here. And when you first text me that you were picking Minnesota, I thought you just were trying to get my goat and wanted me to respond and wanted to tick me off. That is exactly why I did not respond. I'm like, this guy knows football better than this. This guy's a football coach. This guy, come on. You look everything on paper, Minnesota should not beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, you know.
You add in the elements. You add in, okay, Minnesota's at home. Yeah, Vegas gives the home team typically a 3-point advantage. I'm okay with that. You know, the elements played an enormous factor in that game. Both defenses were good, if not great. You know, Minnesota had a couple of starting two or three defensive players that did not play 5 weeks ago. So it was a different Minnesota squad. But offensively, Minnesota doesn't have the weapons. And Carolina... On the outside, they don't have the weapons either. They've got the interior with their tight end, Olsen. If Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Cam Chancellor, and the boys can cover him and corral him and keep him in check, it's going to be a tough day for Cam Newton. I like the fact, as a Seahawk fan, that it was a struggle yesterday in Minnesota. A lot of that had to do with the weather. You saw those deep passes that just floated from Russell Wilson and couldn't get to an open Doug Baldwin, an open Tyler Lockett. Yet, now you give Seattle a week to thaw out and say, okay, our offense was anemic, which the last 6 weeks it's been tops in the NFL. And now we have a chance to right the ship, play in good weather, and battle the Panthers, who, for the most part, we've played toe-to-toe with, if not beaten the majority of the time, obviously, in Seattle this year. The last-minute touchdown by the Panthers sealed the deal. So it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be an epic battle, and the best team's going to win. And in my mind, looking on paper, okay, maybe slightly biased, the Seattle Seahawks are the better team. Carolina's had the easier schedule. And yes, Cam Newton's played great. But, I mean, you even said Russell Wilson shouldn't be the MVP. Then why does he have the majority of the stats better than Cam Newton?
No, this is what I'm talking about as far as Russell Wilson is concerned. And when everybody brings up Russell Wilson, nobody's taken away the fact that he's had an awesome, awesome second half of the season. But we also can't just erase the fact that he had a horrible first half of the season. And as much as people just want to wipe that away and say, hey, everything's great, let's put him in as the MVP, that's only the Seattle fans that are saying that. So for the most part, Cam Newton has done what he needed to do for the whole season. He hasn't had an inconsistency in his play. That puts him ahead of Russell Wilson. Now, with that being said, has Russell Wilson played better than Cam Newton in the second half? Yes, he has. But when you're talking about the whole season, and you're talking about from beginning to end, and you're talking about what, as you had mentioned, that the receiver core isn't what Seattle's is, and the running back core isn't what Seattle's is. When you take all of that into consideration, Cam Newton is your MVP of the NFL. But with that being said as well, they're no slouch when it comes to their receiver core or their running backs. So I don't know what Jonathan Stewart's going to do, our Pacific Northwest favorite from Thurston County. I don't know what Snoop's going to do, but I can tell you he's probably going to be ready to play. I can tell you that Cam Newton, with the week off and these guys getting a chance to lick their wounds a little bit, I can tell you that they're going to be ready to play. When it comes to the Minnesota Vikings and the way the Minnesota Vikings lined up against the Seattle Seahawks, even though the weather was bad, yeah, talent-wise, maybe the Minnesota Vikings weren't as good, but they do have a couple of weapons. I don't know why we overlook Adrian Peterson as a valid cog that could.
Nobody's overlooking AP.
And so I don't know why we thought that maybe at their quarterback play was not going to be up to par, you know, because and here's the thing that I take away from it is that Minnesota came in with the home field advantage and they played to it. Now, of course, the weather's going to be a lot better in Carolina, as we had mentioned, or it was somewhere around 50 to 60 degrees. Just because it's going to be 50 to 60 degrees and Seattle played in cold weather the week before doesn't mean that that plays into Seattle's favor. What that means is that we have more of a level playing field than the elements would allow us the week before. With that being said, both teams have to come out and execute. I believe that Carolina, just like Minnesota, will protect its house, and it's not going to be a run through to where the Legion of Boom is just going to go crazy. Let's just face it, if it wasn't for the Legion of Boom, Seattle even wouldn't be in this whole thing. But I do believe that with Carolina, they are a lot better than what people are thinking. And we can talk about their record, and we can say that their record was easy, but that's not their fault. What they've been doing is they've been pummeling teams all throughout the season. So, you know, we'll get a chance to see what this game will bring. But I know for a fact, and this is one of the things that I love talking with Seahawks fans, not necessarily you, because, you know, you do bring it down 1,000 and actually talk sports. But for the rest of the 12s, that think that, hey, just because the weather's going to be fine, we're just going to go in there and take care of business. Russell Wilson's going to throw for 5 touchdowns, and you know, and you know, we're going to have 3 touchdowns from our running backs, and we're just going to go and just trounce all over everybody. That's a fallacy. This is the playoffs, and with the playoffs, everybody brings their A game. All I'm saying is that what the Carolina Panthers are going to do is they're going to protect their house, which is exactly what Seattle has been able to do over the past couple of years because they've had home field advantage. Carolina will protect their house.
Well, we've got so many more topics we haven't had time to touch on. We don't want to go too much longer because we know Don would like to have an evening there at BBS Radio, and you know, we would too. So, Sean, where do you want to go? The rest of the NFL this weekend, the college championship right now, the so many different subjects. Pick one. Let's roll.
Man, well, we've been away for quite some time, man. And, you know, since then, you know, I love to tout about my Golden State Warriors and the stuff that they're doing. And, man, they're just playing some awesome, awesome basketball. They're starting to get healthy again. Just got Harrison Barnes back. I believe Barbosa is going to be back tonight. And so they're starting to get themselves back at full strength. And, man, they're looking awesome. 2 losses in this NBA season, and we're almost halfway through. Think about that, Sean Wally. We're almost halfway through, 36 games into the season, 34-2. And the Warriors have only lost 2 games. And, you know, I'm starting to see that this record could be taken down, not just by the Golden State Warriors, by the way, but by the San Antonio Spurs, who only have 6 losses thus far in the season. And so some great basketball being played in the NBA.
So how long is the NBA season? How many games?
82 games.
82. Okay.
So,
and the NBA, the NBA is what now for all the Pacific Northwest listeners? National Basket Weaving Association, or?
Yeah, you know, until Tuck Willett can finally get something done, or maybe the city of Seattle can stop, you know, giving us hopes that things are moving in the right direction. I guess basketball isn't something that's talked about in the Pacific Northwest.
Did you see what Bill Wixie put out on Facebook?
No, I know that you sent me something from Bill Wixie, but no, what did he say?
Well, this is classic, and, you know, it would be amazing. It's like, okay, I'm going to buy a Powerball ticket now because $1.3 billion is enough for me to build an arena, buy an NBA team for the Sonics to come back. Like, wow, that's good thinking on Bill's part, former guest here on the Double, and of course Q13 Fox Morning News anchor.
Anything to get the Sonics back, you know, would be a definite plus. You know, as we mentioned, the Seattle SuperSonics, of course, we, you know, would like to send our condolences out to the Johnson family. John Johnson, key cog in the Seattle SuperSonics run in 1978-79. Of course, he played with Lenny Wilkins in Cleveland with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And of course, when Lenny became the head coach of the Seattle SuperSonics, he brought Johnny Johnson with him, who was actually the first point forward in the NBA, if you know what that is. Of course, like a Scottie Pippen type of a player. John Johnson passes away this week at the age of 69, so our hearts and condolences go out to the Johnson family. He will definitely be missed, Sean.
Absolutely. Sad day in Seattle SuperSonic history, which should not have any ties to Oklahoma City, but that's another story for another day. And something also awesome on Facebook today. One of the Globetrotter players, Carlos English. He is tied to former NBA player Alex English. That is Alex English's nephew. Put a fun question on Facebook today. Who is the best defender all time in the NBA? And his vote was for one Gary Payton.
Of course, you know, if you love Seattle SuperSonics basketball, you would have to put Gary Payton's name in there, also known as the Glove. And, man, he sure knew how to play defense. Of course, Gary let his defense shine the best in 1996 against the Chicago Bulls. And, of course, he played against, you know, Michael Air Jordan. And, you know, Gary Payton did a phenomenal job, I thought, in playing against the best player in the NBA. No doubt about it. As far as him being one of the best defenders, you know, you can throw up some other players. I'm kind of curious to know who the other players were. You know, for me, I would say that a Michael Jordan would be thrown in there as far as one of the better defenders. As far as guards are concerned, you know, even a Kobe Bryant in his heyday was also a great defender, but can't take anything away from Gary Payton.
All right, Sean, so some say it's the best weekend in the NFL season, the divisional round, 4 NFL games, 2 Saturday, 2 Sunday.
And, yeah, this is the fun part, man, where the playoffs actually started. One of the things we didn't mention, Sean, and, you know, this blew my pick'em league out of the water. Man, all 4 away teams in the wild card wound up winning, which is just amazing to me. You know, that none of these wild card teams would hold serve. But when you look at the matchups, especially at the quarterback position, the team that had the most vintage quarterbacks were the ones that wound up winning. And so, you know, you look at an Aaron Rodgers, you look at Russell Wilson, you look at Ben Roethlisberger, and even Alex Smith. You know, I mean, though, you know, he had the advantage as far as, you know, quarterback prowess over his counterpart. And so that's why all of those teams wound up winning. But yeah, four away teams winning. So this weekend is going to be interesting, Sean.
Absolutely. Two games Saturday, two games Sunday. Of course, the Seattle-Carolina matchup we've talked a lot about is Sunday at 10 a.m. West Coast time.
So I guess the biggest game of this weekend will be Sunday, the CBS game with the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Denver Broncos. Now, you're talking about experience at the quarterback. Sounds like Peyton Manning is ready to go. And, of course, they will be hosting against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Whew, man, who do you have for that one? I mean, Ben, you know, he was supposed to be out of the game against Cincinnati, and for the last series he came back in and marched the team down without a couple of personal foul penalties, of course. But nonetheless, he led his team to victory. What do you expect there with Peyton Manning not playing, you know, for quite some time?
You know, I really would love to see Peyton come back triumphantly, but you know, it's got to be tough for a over 40-year-old that hasn't played in months to come back at 100%. He may not be. He might be 90. He might be 80. But Peyton Manning at 80 or 90% is still better than a healthy Brock Osweiler at this point. Hopefully his knowledge and his brain can help him and alleviate any deficiencies in that throwing shoulder.
Yeah, you know, and even more important, you know, I have to tip the scale to the Denver Broncos defense. They have a highly touted defense. They are playing at home. It is at Mile High. Pittsburgh Steelers do have to travel, and you have a Ben Roethlisberger that has been, you know, less than par. You know, and when with the injury, we don't know how severe that injury is. I just see that as blood in the water for the Denver Broncos defense. I see that Peyton Manning rides the high from being back out on the field and having their defense actually, you know, propel them. And so I look for the Denver Broncos to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
So you've got Carolina, you believe, beating Seattle. Who do you have joining them in the NFC Championship, the Packers or the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I love the Carolina Panthers and what they've done this year. Early in the season, I touted the Arizona Cardinals and their great play, and they're continuing to play great football. There's just something about Aaron Rodgers that you cannot rule them out. And watching them play yesterday and how they just handled business was brilliant. And so even though Green Bay goes into Arizona, and Arizona is the favorite in this game, I tip the scale to Green Bay. I see Green Bay winning this game. It's going to be a close, hard-fought game, but I believe that Green Bay is actually starting to find themselves. You know, and I know there was only one game, and Aaron Rodgers has had probably the most horrific final three, four games of the regular season that he's ever played, but I just see that Green Bay is going to turn this one around and they'll get the win. So I'm looking at Carolina and Green Bay in the NFC title game.
Interesting take from one Sean Boyd in the 916. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, our very first show of 2016. Ooh, good thing I got that right.
Yes, and so, of course, we've been away for a little bit. And Sean, we haven't had the chance to talk about what you have been doing. Of course, you are in Huntsville, Alabama. And, man, for those of our listeners who didn't get a chance to see, which I can't believe because everybody on the planet should have seen Sean Wally on ESPN this past Tuesday as a part of the show, the Harlem Globetrotters against the World All-Stars. And, man, you showed out. You are a huge part in that show, and you did an awesome job, man.
Well, thanks a lot, Sean. It was pretty crazy to be a part of. And, you know, we did our thing with the World All-Stars and the Harlem Globetrotters. And hopefully it was a great game to watch and a lot of good talent on both sides. And You know, it was a lot of fun having TV cameras out there because that's not always the case outside of, you know, a local affiliate coming out to get a few highlights to run on the morning news. But, you know, it was great to have ESPN be a part of it and ham it up for the cameras.
You know, I didn't know how great of an actor you are, man. And, you keep it up. You're going to be on one of these weekly shows on TV in prime time, man. You did an awesome job. And so, you know, I got to tip my cap to you. You know, my family loved watching you. We're jumping up and down. And, you know, we're like, oh, there's Uncle Sean. There's Sean. Oh, my goodness. And, man, you showed out. And so for those who haven't had the chance, for all of our listeners that love basketball and even in the Pacific Northwest, because, of course, the Harlem Globetrotters will be coming to your area. I don't know, Mr. Wally, if your show is going to be coming there, but if you get the chance, make sure that you watch the Harlem Globetrotters. It is still the best show in town. And, of course, if you do get a chance to see Sean Wally, make sure that you get in there and scream the loudest for the World All-Stars, because it is a fun, fun atmosphere for the family.
Well, Sean, I appreciate all the kind words and glad you enjoyed watching it. And if you missed it or want to watch it again, it will air 13 more times on the various ESPN networks, and the second showing will be tomorrow, Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2, the Harlem Globetrotters' 90th anniversary special.
Should be fun. Make sure that you lock that into your schedules. Make sure that you put that recording on, because it is a lot of fun. And it brought back a lot of childhood memories for me watching it. And of course, the show just keeps getting better and better, which is, you know, a tip of the cap to the Harlem Globetrotters and the organization for continuing to make that fun for the family. Man, Sean Wally, we have had an awesome, awesome show. Two awesome guests to start out the 2016 year for On the Double with the Double S Express. Guest number one, Joe Jarzynka, former University of Washington football great, and of course the head coach for the Tacoma Stars reserve teams, was joined us here on the Double. And of course, guest number two, the Tacoma News Tribune's Seattle insider Greg Bell. And we talked Seahawks, we talked a little bit of Huskies, but more importantly, we talked sports, man. And it's been a great, great show, Sean Wally.
It's great to be back on the air and have two big-time guests, which is the normal rule here on the Double. First show of 2016. Be sure to check out our archives if you've missed any of the shows or want to hear them again, bbsradio.com/DSX. You can follow us on Twitter at Double S Express with no first E, XPRESS. Stay up to date on everything in the sports world, the Harlem Globetrotter world, and, you know, in a few weeks, the Super Bowl world.
Well, yes, we try to bring you the best in sports and, you know, bring you all the, you know, the greatest athletes, the greatest journalists, you know, the best announcers, anything known to man. And of course, you know, you can also, you know, email us as well if you would like. And you can go onto our website and email us and tell us what you think. Man, Mr. Wally, our first show of 2016 in the books, as we always say here on the Double, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Don Newsom in Paradise, California, Sean Wally down south in SEC country in Huntsville, Alabama, yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. This is number one for 2016. Looking forward to an awesome year. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.